asking a foreign head of state to investigate Mr. Biden. Isn't that the problem?
Well, I believe I stated I had sort of three concerns about what the impact of the call leaking might be.
Well, if it was a perfect call, would you have had a concern of it leaking?
No. Well, no, I would still have a concern about it leaking.
Okay. And would you have thought it was appropriate if President Trump had asked Zelensky to investigate John Kasich or to investigate Nancy Pelosi or to investigate Ambassador Volker? Would that be appropriate?
In those hypothetical cases, no. Not appropriate.
But you're not sure about Joe Biden?
Sir, again, I can only speak to what I understood at the time and why I acted the way I did at the time.
Finally, my colleagues asked about, well, doesn't aid get held up for all kinds of reasons? Ambassador Volker, have you ever seen military aid held up because the president wanted his rival investigated?
No, I have not seen that.
Have you ever seen that, Mr. Williams? Mr. Morrison, I'm sorry.
No, Chairman.
I yield to the ranking member.
So you took two additional minutes. Are you giving our side 7 minutes?
Of course.
I recognize Mr. Turner. Thank you. Ambassador Volker, Mr. Morrison, good to see you again. I appreciate your service to your country and your service in government. Our country is safer today because of the work of both of you men. I want you to know that during all the testimony that we've had, no one has ever alleged that either of you have done anything inappropriate or improper. And everyone has spoken of both of you as having a high level of professionalism and a high degree of ethical standards.
Mike Turner, Republican from Ohio.
Ambassador Volker, I appreciated in your opening statement your comments of your work to focus on Russia as an invasion of Ukraine and an occupation and your work on legal defensive arms. That would include the javelins, would it not, Ambassador Volker?
Yes, that's right.
And that made a big difference with Ukraine, did it not?
A very big difference.
Mr. Morrison, would you speak to, tell us about your military service.
Mr. Turner, I'm a U.S. Naval Reserve officer. I'm an intelligence officer.
And where did you go to law school?
George Washington University.
Now, gentlemen, there's been a lot of talk about a lot of people, and we're going to have to pick up the pace here because these are like short periods of time that we have now for this portion of questions. A lot of people talking about their perceptions, their beliefs, their feelings even, what they heard and their understandings and their thoughts. Ambassador Taylor, Mr. Kent, Ambassador Yovanovitch, and Lieutenant Colonel Vindman all had conversations with each other and with other people and all had a whole bunch of hearsay. But I can assure you this boils down to just one thing. This is an impeachment inquiry concerning the President of the United States. So the only thing that matters besides all these people talking to each other and all their feelings and all of their thoughts and understandings, it really only comes down to what did the President of the United States intend and what did he say and what did the Ukrainians understand or hear? Ambassador Volker, you're one of the first people that we've had in these open public testimony that's had conversations with both. So I get to ask you. You had a meeting with the President of the United States, and you believe that the policy issues that he raised concerning Ukraine were valid, correct?
Yes.
Did the President of the United States ever say to you that he was not going to allow aid for the United States to go to the Ukraine unless there were investigations into Burisma, the Bidens, or the 2016 elections?
No, he did not.
Did the Ukrainians ever tell you that they understood that they would not get a meeting with the President of the United States, a phone call with the President of the United States, military aid, or foreign aid from the United States unless they undertook investigations of Burisma, the Bidens, or the 2016 elections?
No, they did not.
You know, pretty much, Ambassador Volker, you just like took apart their entire case. I mean, if the President of the United States does not believe or intend it, and the Ukrainians don't understand it, and you're the only one who actually stands in between them. Now, I gotta ask you, Ambassador Volker, you know, the three amigo thing or whatever that they're trying to disparage you with, you're not part of an irregular channel, right, Ambassador Volker? Aren't you the official channel?
That is correct.
Explain that. Explain how you're the official channel and not an irregular
right.
channel.
So I was appointed by the Secretary of State, Secretary Tillerson, in July of 2017 to be the U.S. Special Representative for Ukraine negotiations. That's a role that's different from Assistant Secretary of State or different from Ambassador in Ukraine. That role is particularly focused on the diplomatic activities surrounding the efforts to reverse Russia's invasion and occupation of Ukraine. It is Minsk Agreement implementation. It is the Normandy process with France and Germany. It is support from NATO. It is support for sanctions from the European Union. It's the OSCE and the monitoring missions. It is the efforts of individual allies like Poland, like the UK, like Canada that are supporting Ukraine. It is work at a senior level in the interagency with Secretary of Defense.
Great description. I'm going to cut you off there. Ambassador Volker, you were also one of the few people who had actually spoken to Giuliani, the so-called irregular channel. Again, all these other people who had feelings and understandings about what Giuliani was doing. Did Giuliani ever tell you that United States aid or a meeting with the President of the United States would not occur for the Ukrainians until they agreed to an investigation of Burisma, the Bidens of the 2016 election?
Yeah, everything I heard from Giuliani, I took to be his opinion.
Excellent.
It was not guidance.
So I would assume then that the Ukrainians never told you that Giuliani had told them that in order to get a meeting with the president, a phone call with the president, military aid or a foreign aid from the United States, that they would have to do these investigations?
No.
Great. Okay. Mr. Morrison, you testified that you spoke to Ambassador Sondland, and he told you of a conversation that he had with the President of the United States. On page 128 of his testimony, he relates the content of a conversation that he had with the President, and he was asked about it. It's the only one he relates, and he said, he was asked whether or not there was a quid pro quo. He said, I didn't frame the question basically to the president that way as a link. I did not frame the question that way. I asked the open-ended question, what do you want? This is Mr. Sondland in his testimony asking this question to the President of the United States. And this is what he reports at the President of the United States. He said, I want nothing. I don't want to give them anything. I don't want anything from them. I want Zelensky to do the right thing. That's what he kept repeating, no quid pro quo, over and over again. Mr. Morrison, do you have any reason to believe that Mr. Sondland is not telling the truth as the content of his conversation with the President of the United States?
No, Congressman.
Now, do either of you have any information or evidence that anyone who has testified before this committee, either in the secret dungeon testimonies that have been released or in these open testimonies, has perjured themselves or has lied to this committee?
I have no reason to think that.
Mr. Morrison?
No, sir.
Mr. Morrison, Lieutenant Colonel Vindman reported to you. Is that correct?
He did, sir.
Now, you have a legal background. He said that he listened to the phone call which you said you saw nothing that had occurred illegally, and he said that he believed the President of the United States demanded to President Zelensky that these investigations move forward. Do you believe, because he only was telling us his opinion, do you believe in your opinion that the President of the United States demanded that President Zelensky undertake these investigations?
No, sir.
To both of you, Ukraine is an aspirant to the EU. Ambassador Sondland is the ambassador to the EU. Is the Ukraine in the ambassador's portfolio? Ambassador Volker?
Yes, also because the EU sanctions on Ukraine are incredibly important.
Mr. Morrison?
I agree, sir.
I yield back.
Mr. Himes.
Questions from Michael Turner, who is a Republican from Ohio. We now turn to Democrat Jim Himes.
President Trump has described his July 25th phone call with President Zelensky as quote, perfect. And I think he's done that on Twitter not once, not twice, but by my count, 11 times. It feels to me like this characterization of perfect is of a piece with the idea that we hear in defense of the president's request to the Ukrainians, that that's just normal course of business pursuing anti-corruption. And I've been concerned from the start that this is actually not about going after corruption. It is, in fact, about aiming corruption at the vice president. Mr. Morrison, you listened in on the call in the White House Situation Room. Did you hear the president mention the company CrowdStrike and the server?
I believe so, yes, sir.
Did you hear President Trump mention the Bidens?
Yes, sir.
Did you hear President Trump in the length of that phone call use the word corruption?
No, sir. Sir, I don't believe he did.
Was the request that Ukraine investigate CrowdStrike and the Bidens consistent with what you understood to be official U.S. policy towards combating corruption in Ukraine?
Sir, it was the first I heard of much of this.
In fact, in your deposition, you testified that you wanted to stay away from what you described as this, quote, bucket of investigations. Why did you want to stay away from those issues?
That was what I was advised by Dr. Hill.
You also testified that the president's call was not, and I'm quoting you here, the full-throated endorsement of the Ukraine reform agenda that I was hoping to hear. What did you mean by that?
Sir, what we, myself, Colonel Vindman, others, what we prepared in the package we provided the president was background on President Zelensky, background on his positions about reforming Ukraine, reforming its institutions, rooting out corruption. We were hoping, we recommended the president very clearly support what President Zelensky had run on in his own election and what his Servant of the People Party had run on in its election, where it received a majority mandate.
But that didn't come up in the call, did it?
No, sir.
Are you aware of any other discussion in which the president actually raised those things with the new Ukrainian president?
Corruption reform?
Yes.
Sir, it's been some time since I refreshed myself on the discussion that took place at the UN General Assembly, so I hesitate to say, did he ever raise it? But he did not raise it at the time of the 25 July phone call.
Okay. I'm switching gears a little bit. You strike me as a process guy, and it's nagging at me because you characterized the Ambassador Sondland's linking in whatever way it happened of aid to an investigation as the Gordon problem. You said it caused you to roll your eyes. Ambassador Volker said it was everybody in the July 10th meeting thought it was inappropriate. John Bolton characterizes this as the drug deal. So it seems like everybody in the room understands that there's a huge problem here. My understanding is that it would be normal course of business when you have an ambassador out there going rogue, as apparently there was consensus Ambassador Sondland was doing, that either the National Security Advisor John Bolton or the Secretary of State might rein them in. Why didn't that happen?
Sir, I can't speak to that, but I would generally agree that ambassadors work for the Secretary of State and the President.
Do you have... You don't have any idea... You worked for him. You don't have any idea why John Bolton would characterize what the ambassador was doing as a drug deal, but not rein him in.
Ambassadors don't work for the National Security Advisor, sir.
No, but John Bolton's National Security Advisor. He presumably spends time with the Secretary of State. I'm just puzzled that everybody in the room is, you know, characterizing this as the Gordon problem or inappropriate or a drug deal, and the Secretary of State does nothing.
Sir, I'm sorry. Was there a question?
Well, yeah, you don't have any insight into that?
No, sir.
Ambassador Volker, you testified that you were troubled once you read the record of the president's July 25th call. You testified, quote, that asking the president of Ukraine to work together with the attorney general to look into this, you can see as it has happened, this becomes explosive in our domestic politics. And in your new testimony, you call this unacceptable. What specifically in that call to the Ukraine president do you find unacceptable or troubling?
It is the reference to Vice President Biden.
Thank you. I yield back the balance of my time.
Mr. Conaway.
Those are questions from Democrat Jim Himes of Connecticut. We now turn to Republican Mike Conaway of Texas.
At least in Lieutenant Colonel Vindman's mind, that was equivalent to a demand, an order, a requirement. And yet, in the last part of the conversation between the two heads of state, President Trump talks about a prosecutor that he's particularly in favor of and would like to see stay there. And Zelensky, though, says... Mr. President, no, since we've won the absolute majority in our parliament, the next prosecutor general will be 100% my person, my candidate. Does that, to either one of you, does that sound like a head of state who's been cowed or bullied and is under the thumb of the President of the United States?
Not at all.
No, sir.
All right. The impact of the pause that occurred, the 55-day pause in the lethal assistance or the security assistance, none of us have really understood exactly what happened during that time frame. No one knew about it other than internal U.S. folks until late August. And so the Russians would not necessarily have known about it. The potential impact that I agree with on Russia's interpretation of our support for Ukraine wasn't known until those last 14 days. But the impact on the lethal aid that they already had, should Russia had tried to move the line of contact further west with their tanks, would the lethal assistance that we'd already given been available to them to push back on that?
Yes, it would.
Mr. Morrison, comments?
Sir, I agree with that, but I would also add the hold, as I understood it, applied to Ukraine security assistance, UASI, UASI, and FMF. It did not apply to FMS, and the javelins were provided under FMS.
Okay, so the most lethal weapon that President Trump provided to the Ukrainians, that President Obama and his national policy, which he set, was available to them should the Russians have pushed their tanks west? The javelins?
Yes, sir.
Throughout that process, even with the pause, even with all the stuff that was going on?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Associated Press is reporting that Ambassador Volker, you mentioned it earlier, that the Russians in an act of war took two gunships and a tug and 24 sailors last November. And yet the Russians have now given the 24 sailors back in September, and the Associated Press is reporting today that they're giving the gunboats and the tug back. Does that sound like a Ukraine is inept at being able to negotiate with the Russians because they're wounded in some way by our actions?
No, I would not say that the Ukrainians are inept.
All right. Thank you, sir. Mr. Chairman, I would like, as a personal request, request that you and or one of your lawyer members of the committee that are lawyers to put into the record the federal statute that provides for the absolute immunity or right to immunity that you've exerted over and over and over. I don't think it's there, but if it is, in fact, a federal statute and or a brief that you can cite, put that into the record so that we'll know that. And before you get mad and accuse me of wanting to out the whistleblower, you get upset every time somebody accuses you personally of knowing who the whistleblower is. I get upset every time you, every time you accuse me of simply, because I want to know the whistleblower and we want to know what's going on, that we want to out that interviewer. That's unfair for you to make that accusation, and I get just as mad. This is about leveling the playing field between our two teams. Your team knows a whistleblower. They have intimate knowledge of who he or she is. The IGIC, that's ICIG, even mentioned indicia of biases. Your team fully understands that. Our team should fully understand that. It's simply leveling the playing field. And I know that you've overrun my request for a closed-door subpoena. I understand that. But I do think that it's important that you put into the record the basis on which you continue to assert this absolute right to anonymity. Excuse me, I misspoke earlier. Anonymity by the whistleblower. Also, the speaker on September the 23rd issued a, dear colleague, that's a document that we all use to talk to each other. It went to 434 other members of Congress. It was intended to be the truth. It was intended to be straightforward. She says in that, dear colleague, that the whistleblower has, by law, is required to testify to the House and the Senate Intelligence Committees. Now, you're defying the speaker in this regard. I understand that's between you and her, but if she's correct, then you're defying the speaker, defying the law. If, on the other hand, she misled us into thinking something that was not true, then I think you need to tell the speaker that she needs to retract that dear colleague letter, at least set the record straight. As is the speaker, is the whistleblower required by law, as the speaker said, to testify to us or not? And what is this absolute right to anonymity that that you question? With that, I yield back.
Time of the gentleman.
That was Mike Conaway, a Republican from Texas. Adam Schiff.
Allows whistleblower to remain anonymous. As well as Ranking Member Nunes' prior comments talking about the importance of anonymity for whistleblowers. And with that, I recognize Ms. Sewell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Democrat Terry Sewell, Alabama.
It seems by early July, it's become pretty clear that Mr. Giuliani has become a major problem for the U.S.-Ukraine relations. You previously testified that on July 2nd, you met with the Ukrainian president and his aide in Toronto. Is that right?
I had a bilateral meeting between the U.S. and Ukrainian delegations and then a pull-aside meeting with the president and his chief of staff.
There you discuss Mr. Giuliani's, quote, negative view, quote, of Ukraine based on a conspiracy theory about the 2016 election, right?
I conveyed that he was repeating a negative narrative about Ukraine based on accusations of the then Prosecutor General Lutsenko.
Are you saying that you didn't think that they were negative views?
No, that they were negative views.
Okay, but that wasn't your description.
I'm sorry, I've lost the question. If you could repeat.
Well, I was trying to get at who said the negative views. That you discussed negative.
So the Prosecutor General of Ukraine was putting out this series of conspiracy theories that I believe were self-serving and inaccurate. Mr. Giuliani had repeated these to me, so I believe that he was at least affected by those and believed those and was concerned about
them. And believed that they were negative.
Believed that they were negative and was conveying them to the president.
So was it problematic that he believed that they were negative views?
The whole thing was problematic.
Ambassador Taylor testified that on July 2nd, you told Ukrainians that they needed to, quote, cooperate on investigations, end quote. You're now saying that you don't recall that saying those words. Is that correct?
I don't believe I said the words cooperate on investigations.
Did you say investigations?
I believe I did, yes.
And what did you mean by investigations?
I meant Burisma in 2016 was in my mind, but I wanted to keep it general, and that Ukraine, in being convincing to Giuliani and hopefully also to the president, that they are serious about fighting corruption, would engage in whatever investigations necessary to clean up the country.
Now, moving to July 10th, Ambassador Volker sent you a text message. You sent a text message to Giuliani, and I think it's on the... It's on the screen now, and you said, Mr. Mayor, could we meet for coffee or lunch in the next week or so? I'd like to update you on my conversations about Ukraine. I think we have an opportunity to get what you need. Did you say that? Is that an accurate?
That is an accurate text message.
And what did you mean by what you need?
Contact with the actual government of Ukraine, the people who are now representing President Zelensky and his team.
Later that day, you and Ambassador Sondland met with Ukraine officials at the White House. We heard from several witnesses that Ambassador Sondland told the Ukrainians that they needed to cooperate with the quote-unquote investigations in order to get the Oval Office meeting that's scheduled on the books. Were these investigations a part of the official U.S. policy towards Ukraine?
U.S. Policy toward Ukraine was about fighting corruption and Ukraine going after
that. But was
it
specifically about these kinds of investigation? You said the investigation was Burisma.
Right.
Okay.
In order to fight corruption, you need to conduct investigations. You need to see what Ukrainian citizens have been up to and doing.
But so was that the purpose of that? Or was it because the president, you knew that, that the president wanted those investigations to be done as a condition for them to actually have a meeting in the White House?
Well, first off, we have to be clear what we're talking about in terms of investigations. We're not talking about Vice President Biden. We're not talking about some of the...
Well, Burisma that has nothing to do with... You're saying that...
I'm saying that whether Ukrainians within the company of Burisma had acted in a corrupt way or sought to buy influence, that's a legitimate thing for Ukraine to investigate. And if Ukraine can make a statement about their intentions on fighting corruption domestically, that is helpful in order to convince President Trump ultimately that this is a
routine. With all due respect, Ambassador Volker, we heard from two witnesses this morning that those investigations were not official U.S. policy. Ambassador Volker, I don't know if you understand what you were getting yourself into, but sitting here today, I trust you understand that pressuring Ukraine to involve itself in U.S. domestic policy is just simply wrong. I yield back the balance of my time.
Mr. Turner.
I yield my time to Jim Jordan.
I thank the gentleman. Ambassador Volker, you were the special representative to Ukraine, is that right?
That is correct.
Republican Jim Jordan, Ohio.
Prior to that, in diplomatic service, you worked at the NSC, you were Deputy Assistant Secretary of State, you were Ambassador to NATO, Senate confirmed Ambassador to NATO in your distinguished diplomatic career. So it may not bother you when you're referred to as the irregular channel, but it bothers Representative Turner, it bothers me. You were the special envoy to Ukraine. And in that role, you said in your opening statement, you were the administration's most outspoken public figure highlighting Russia's invasion and occupation of Ukraine and calling out Russia's responsibility in the war. Is that right?
That is correct.
And in that capacity, you strongly advocated for lifting the ban on sale of lethal defensive arms to Ukraine. Is that right?
That is correct.
And President Trump did it, didn't he?
That is correct.
But in spite of that, President Trump was still skeptical of giving hard-earned tax dollars to Ukraine, right?
Yes.
You said that in your testimony as well. And the reason he's skeptical is, let's be honest, the guy doesn't like foreign aid, right?
That's one reason, and then Ukraine's history of corruption is another.
One of the third most corrupt countries on the planet. And Europe isn't doing enough. And, oh, by the way, in the president's mind, he did think Ukraine was trying to influence the 2016 election. Because things happened. The Democrats want to deny it, but when the ambassador from Ukraine here to the United States writes an op-ed on August 4th, 2016, criticizing then-candidate Trump, that's certainly trying to influence the election. When Mr. Avakov, a key minister in their government, says all kinds of negative things about candidate Trump, that certainly looks like it's trying to influence the election. And when Mr. Lushenko states in the Financial Times during the campaign the majority of Ukrainian political figures want Hillary Clinton to win, that probably sticks in a candidate's mind. I know we all run campaigns. When people say bad things about us in the course of the campaign, we don't necessarily think great things about them. But you were convinced Zelensky was the real deal, right?
That is correct.
Because you spent a lot of time with the guy. And guess what? When aid was frozen, you knew if you could get these two guys together, it'd work out. When aid was frozen, what did you say? You told the Ukrainians, don't worry about it. Well, you didn't say it. You said, don't be alarmed.
Yeah.
Right?
That is correct.
And guess what happened? By the time aid's frozen and when it's released, all kinds of interactions between President Zelensky and senior U.S. officials. Right? Starts with the call. Starts with the call with President Trump and President Zelensky. Next day, you meet with President Zelensky in Ukraine. Then we have Ambassador Bolton meeting with him. Then we have Vice President Pence meeting with him. Then we have U.S. Senators Johnson and Murphy meeting with him. And guess what? In none of those meetings, not a single one, did security assistance dollars in exchange for an investigation, not once did they come up. Did that conversation come up? Is that right?
That is correct.
Not once. No discussion of aid for investigations, and as you testified, you never believed aid for investigations was ever being talked about either in any of these conversations.
That is correct.
But what happened in those meetings? They all became convinced of the same thing you knew. They all saw the same darn thing. This guy was the real deal. He is a legitimate reformer. And they all came back. They all came back and told the president, hey, Mr. President, this guy's real. Go ahead and release the dollars. Oh, by the way, in that same time frame, you know what else happened? Their parliament, their newly elected parliament, as Mr. Morrison testified to, stayed up all night to pass the reform measures to get rid of the prosecutor, to put in the Supreme High Anti-Corruption Court, to get rid of this ability that no one in their Congress, in their parliament, could ever be hit with a crime. I mean, that's unbelievable. All that happens, and they come back and tell President Trump, hey, guess what? Time to release the dollars. And he did it, right?
The dollars were released.
Yeah. You did your job. You did your job. And you got to put up with all this because the Democrats are out to get this president. You did your job just the way Mr. Turner described you did your job over all these years. All these years, and the Democrats put you through this. You have served our country well. The kind of diplomat we want serving. And here's the saddest, one of the saddest things about all this, that what the Democrats are putting us through, you two guys who are here telling it straight, you've both decided you're going to step out of government because of what these guys are doing. And that's the sad thing. People like Ambassador Volker and Tim Morrison, who have served our country so well, are now stepping out of our government because of what these guys are doing. And that's why Mr. Turner got so fired up a few minutes ago, why I'm so fired up too, because we appreciate what you guys did. I yield back.
Ms. Carson. Republican Jim Jordan, we now turn to Democrat Andre Carson of Indiana.
I want to focus on the press statement that President Trump and Rudy Giuliani wanted Ukraine to make announcing investigations to benefit President Trump. On August 9th, sir, Ambassador Sondland and you had this exchange. Ambassador Sondland says, Morrison, ready to get dates as soon as your MAC confirms. You reply, excellent. How did you sway him? And Ambassador Sondland says, not sure I did. I think POTUS really wants the deliverable. The deliverable here was a public announcement that Ukraine was going to conduct investigations into Burisma and alleged 2016
election interference by Ukraine. Hello, this is Cleo, and you're listening to WGXC 90.7 FM, ACRA.
Thank you. I understood the deliverable.
On August 13th, you and Ambassador Sondland discussed a draft statement from Ukraine with Mr. Giuliani. Sir, why did you discuss the draft statement with Mr. Giuliani?
Because the idea of the statement had come up from Mr. Yermak's meeting with Mr. Giuliani. You remember that Mr. Yermak asked me to connect him with Mr. Giuliani. I did. They had a meeting. And then they both called me afterwards. Mr. Giuliani said that he thought Ukraine should make a statement about fighting corruption. Mr. Yermak said, and we will say also specifically Burisma in 2016. Mr. Yermak provided me a draft statement. And I wanted to be assured that this statement would actually correct the perception that Mr. Giuliani had of Ukraine and what they stand for now, so that that would also be conveyed to President Trump and solve this problem that I had observed with our May 23rd meeting with the president. The problem being that he's getting a bad set of information. A statement like this could potentially correct that.
So was Mr. Giuliani satisfied with this statement?
No, he was not.
Why not?
He believed that it needed to say Burisma and 2016 specifically, or else it would not be credible, would not mean anything new.
So in fact, Mr. Giuliani wanted a statement that referenced Burisma and the 2016 elections explicitly, one that would benefit essentially President Trump. Mr. Ambassador, here's the text you sent to the Ukrainian official on August 13th. Let's put that up on the screen. You said, hi, Andre. Good talking. Following is the text with an insert at the end for the two key items. Mr. Ambassador, those two key items were specific references to investigations of Burisma and the 2016 elections. Isn't that right, sir?
That is correct.
Did Mr. Giuliani, sir, dictate those two key items to you, sir?
Well, as you see, I had just had a conversation with Mr. Yermak to describe to him the conversation that we had just had with Mr. Giuliani. Mr. Giuliani said that it would need to include these things for it to be convincing to him. I put them in so we understood what he was talking about, and I shared it with Andre to say this is what he is talking about.
And you included them in the proposal to the Ukrainians?
I put it back in to be clear to the Ukrainians. This is what the conversation was.
Mr. Ambassador, if you believe the statement that Mr. Giuliani dictated in August was not a good idea, sir, why were the Ukrainians still considering giving an interview with the same themes in September?
Well, if I may, Congressman, I conveyed this to the Ukrainians in order to be clear, so we knew what the conversation was about, since this was following up on his prior conversation. The Ukrainians then said they had reasons not to do that, and they described those reasons, and I agreed with them, and we agreed to just scrap the statement. From that point on, I didn't have any further conversations about this statement. So I don't know how it came up or why it came up that there would be a possibility of President Zelensky doing an interview with U.S. media later saying something like this, and in the end, he didn't do that either.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Morrison, you said that the president's requests during the July 25th call were not consistent with U.S. policy. I emphatically agree with you, sir. Yet these text messages show that Ambassador Volker spent much of August pressing Ukraine to meet those requests. We can only be grateful. I guess that the president essentially got caught, and Congress passed a law to ensure the funding was released to Ukraine before it was too late. I thank you both for your service. Mr. Chairman, I yield back.
Dr. Winstrup.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Both of you gentlemen, thank you very much for being here. I want to start, if I can, with you, Mr. Morrison. In discussing the 725...
Brad Winstrup is a Republican from Ohio.
...and the concerns that Lieutenant Colonel Vindman had. Lieutenant Colonel Vindman came to you with edits for the transcript, and you stated that you accepted all of his edits. Is that correct?
I would have accepted all of the edits that I believed were faithful to what was actually discussed.
Did he come to you with an edit that said that the word demand should be in there?
I don't recall that specifically, sir, no.
He didn't either. How soon after the phone call did he meet with you on that particular issue?
We got the draft, as was normal, fairly quickly after the call, so that same day.
That same day. So today he said, I've reported my concerns to Mr. Eisenberg. It is improper for the President of the United States to demand a foreign government investigate a U.S. citizen and political opponent. Now, he was going to Mr. Eisenberg with his concerns about the conversation, yet he did not at any point on the edits say that there should be a demand. And, you know, he didn't do that, but he did say that he didn't come to you with his concerns because you weren't available. But that same day, he came to you with edits. Was that correct?
I believe that's generally correct, yes, sir.
Okay. Well, he said you weren't available, and you didn't hear the president make a demand, did you?
No, sir.
So sometime between the call and today, Lieutenant Colonel Vidman must have been hearing some voices, and he heard demand at the time, but he didn't hear it that day, and he didn't make it an issue that day, but today he does. I think that's pretty bizarre. When Lieutenant Colonel Vidman went to legal, Mr. Eisenberg, do you know if he was advised not to speak to you?
I don't have any firsthand knowledge of that, no, sir.
Do you know if he was advised to contact the IGIC?
No, sir, I have no firsthand knowledge of that.
So you don't know what he was advised when he went to legal?
No, sir, I do not.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Mr. Volker, I want to tell you, I really enjoyed your opening testimony today, taking us through that. I know it's kind of long, but I thought it was extremely well done, and I appreciate it. You talk about letters signed and sharing concerns about leadership in your assigned country, about agreeing with and sometimes disagreeing with the leadership of your own country when you felt it was appropriate. You're the boots on the ground for the administration, let's face it. You're part of that team that is there to serve the country in that way. And that all to me sounded like the works of a very good diplomat, and I want to thank you for that.
Thank you, sir.
It's truly appreciated. And, you know, corruption was a concern, legitimately, in Ukraine, and in many ways. And Mr. Jordan pointed out some of the things that were done by Ukrainians in plain sight, I might use that term, in plain sight, by putting op-eds in our newspapers. And it's certainly more than one country can be trying to influence our elections. Would you agree with that?
I agree with that.
And, you know, we keep hearing that whole thing about the Ukrainians, that's all been debunked. It was just the Russians. Well, you know, that comes from an IC community that some of the people that have come up with those conclusions are some of the very same people that we're going to find out, if we haven't already, were deeply involved with this whole Russian collusion hoax. But I want to say you did a great job. You vetted Zelensky's intentions, what he intended to be as a president. Would you say that's accurate?
Yes, that was, in fact, one of the key objectives of the presidential delegation at the inauguration, to take our own judgment and report back to the president.
And that's what your job should be. And you became comfortable with this president, correct?
Yes, I did.
And you worked to assure our president that you were comfortable with this president. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And in some ways, you have to work sometimes through any means available. And that might include working with Rudy Giuliani, if it could be helpful to you to get that message and advice to the president. Would that be correct?
I believe that the messages being conveyed by Mr. Giuliani were a problem because they were at variance with what our official message to the president was, and not conveying that positive assessment that we all had. And so I thought it was important to try to step in and fix the problem.
And in that, I think you termed that a useful barometer of where things were?
Yes.
So those useful barometers, I think, can come in a lot of different fashions, like Dennis Rodman in North Korea or James Taylor in France singing "You Got a Friend," if they can help the cause. And in that situation, it's not illegal. Good job, Ambassador. Thank you very much. I yield back.
Ms. Spear.
Chairman, thank you. And thank
Live
you.
Live coverage of Pacifica Radio's Gavel to Gavel broadcast of the House Intelligence Committee inquiry, impeachment inquiry hearing. This is Jackie Spear, a Democrat from California.
The whistleblower came forward we wouldn't know anything about this, but for the fact that the Inspector General of the CIA found it to be both urgent and credible, we wouldn't know anything about it. Mr. Morrison, you said that after you heard the call, you went directly to the attorneys in the National Security Council and recommended that they be limited access, and they were subsequently put into a special server. The White House has not released any documents whatsoever to this committee. So to you, Mr. Volker, thank you. But for the fact that you, as a private citizen with your own personal phone and your text messages with Mr. Giuliani and Mr. Sondland and Mr. Mayak and whomever else, but for those text messages that we've been putting up on the screen all day, we would have nothing, nothing. And this cover-up would be complete. That's something we should think about. Now, on July 19th, you had breakfast with Rudy Giuliani at the Trump Hotel, correct?
That's correct.
In that conversation, at one point, he brought up Mr. Lutsenko, and you said that whatever Mr. Lutsenko is saying, that's not credible. Is that correct?
Yes.
And then he brought up Mr. Biden, and I'm going to quote you here. I've known him for a long time. He's a person of integrity. To Giuliani, simply not credible to me. Joe Biden would be influenced in his duties as vice president by money or things for a son or anything like that. Now, we've had many discussions over the last few days about these investigations into Burisma and Biden and the 2016 CrowdStrike server. And you, in that conversation with Mr. Giuliani, basically debunked all of that. Now, at that time, at that breakfast, who else was with you at that breakfast?
There was someone that Mr. Giuliani brought along. I later learned that this was Lev Parnas, who we've learned a lot about since then.
So Mr. Lev Parnas was at that breakfast that Mr. Giuliani had with you, and we now know that Mr. Parnas has since been indicted for foreign campaign contributions to President Trump's Political Action Committee. Is that correct?
No, I have seen that.
All right. On May 23rd, you were in that discussion with the president, and at one point he referred to Zelensky having terrible people around him. Who do you think he was calling terrible people around him?
There were two people that came to mind. One of them was a former investigative journalist and later a parliamentarian named Serhiy Leshchenko. Serhiy Leshchenko is someone that in many of these stories is seen as bringing forth a black ledger relating to Paul Manafort's activities in Ukraine. That was one person. The other person I thought it could refer to was the person who was being named as President Zelensky's chief of presidential administration, Andriy Bogdan. He was known as a lawyer for one of the main oligarchs in Ukraine, Igor Kolomoisky, and there was a lot of controversy at the time about him being appointed to the administration.
Do you call them? Do you think of them as terrible people?
I don't think either one of them is terrible people, no.
All right. Thank you. Mr. Morrison, earlier in testimony that was elicited from our colleagues on the other side of the aisle, you indicated that others had represented to you that Colonel Vindman leaked. Do you remember saying that?
Yes, ma'am.
All right. Colonel Vindman this morning, under oath, said that he did not, does not leak. Now, would you therefore want to rearrange your comments about the references you made to Colonel Vindman?
No, ma'am.
So even though under oath he said that he has never leaked, you believing people who said to you that he may have leaked?
Ma'am, I didn't believe or disbelieve them. I'm merely relating what they told me.
Well, they told you, and so then you decided to continue to put that forward, even though you had no evidence.
No, ma'am.
Thank you. I yield back.
Ma'am, I'm sorry. Chairman, if I could answer. No, ma'am, that's incorrect. They Dr. Hill, Mr. Erath, others in the NSC raised concerns about Alex. Those concerns were noted. I didn't take them for face value. I treated them as representations of others. I was on alert, but I formed my own judgments. I took no action because of the statements of someone else that I couldn't independently validate.
Mr. Stewart.
Thank you, gentlemen. Welcome to Impeachapalooza 2019, which is a Democratic plan to compel America to impeach President Donald J. Trump through the sheer force of boredom.
Republican Chris Stewart of Utah.
And it turns out impeachment is very boring if you don't have any compelling or any condemning evidence. Good news and bad news. The good news is I'm going to be very, very brief. We're going on 10-plus hours of this. I will yield back some of my time. The bad news is most of my colleagues after me won't, so we've still got some time to go. Ambassador Volker, very quickly, do you think that someone should be immune from investigation of suspected ethical or criminal activity just because they were a candidate for office, even for office of the President of the United States?
I don't think anyone should be above the law.
Well, of course not. That would be absurd to suggest that. And I was certain that's how you would answer that question. What if some of these alleged ethical or criminal allegations occurred overseas, occurred in another country? Would it be improper to seek the host country's help, such as we do with Interpol or any other law enforcement agency?
There are channels for doing that for American citizens who may have committed crimes abroad.
Okay. And again, to seek the host nation's their government's help is not unusual at all, would it?
That is correct, and we often have treaties for that.
Thank you. And again, that's painfully obvious, and to me that's exactly and the only thing that the President was doing here. Mr. Morrison, I want to refer just briefly to Lieutenant Colonel Vindman's testimony where he described the six people, I believe it was five or six people, that were in the Situation Room listening to this phone call between the two presidents. Colonel Vindman described these individuals as exceptional. He stated that there was no reason to question their integrity or professionalism. This was an exchange that he and I had in the closed-door testimony. Do you agree with the description of these national security staff as exceptional people?
Sir, they are patriots, yes.
People of great integrity and professionalism?
Yes, sir.
Did any of these exceptional individuals, people of unquestioned integrity and professionalism, indicate to you that they had thought that the President of the United States engaged in any illegal or unethical behavior as a result of this phone call?
Not that I'm aware of, Congressman.
Did any of them suggest to you in any way that they thought the President was involved with bribery or any such thing associated with that?
Not that I'm aware of, Congressman.
You know, it only leaves two possible explanations. Either these individuals of what we've described as great integrity, either that's not true, which I don't believe, or they just interpreted an ambiguous conversation very differently than did Colonel Vindman. And I have one last thing just as an aside. As an Air Force officer, I've never understood why President Obama was against providing lethal aid to Ukraine. Ambassador, do you have some insight into why they refused to do that?
I would only point to the statements from the administration at the time. There was a perception that our allies would oppose it, that Germany would oppose it. There was a perception that Germany should be in the lead. There was a perception that it could be provocative to Russia or escalate the conflict. As I've said extensively at the time and as Special Representative, I don't agree with those arguments. And I believe that the record has borne out that providing those lethal defensive arms was actually very important.
Well, I agree with you, Ambassador. I think that you got it right, and I think President Trump got it right. And with that, I yield back.
Ms. Quigley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ambassador, I want to...
Mike Quigley, Democrat from Illinois.
A meeting you had with Ambassador Taylor and Mr. Yermak, September 14th in Kyiv. Do you recall this meeting, sir?
I believe we had dinner. It was around the time of the YES conference.
Okay. And do you remember discussing with Mr. Yermak Ukraine's intent to investigate their former president, Mr. Poroshenko?
I remember raising the issue of the possibility of prosecutions.
Well, they brought it up. Is that correct? You raised it, and
no,
they talked
I
about their intention.
Excuse me, Congressman, I'm sorry. To be clear, there was a lot of talk in Kyiv at that time about whether the new team would be prosecuting the former president. And I had met with President Poroshenko. I had met with others in the opposition as well. And I wanted to call Mr. Yermak's attention to the potential problems of this. I'm very familiar with other examples of countries in the region that have gone for prosecutions of the former government, and these have created deep divisions in society. And so I cited President Zelensky's inauguration speech, his National Day speech from August 24th, that was all about unifying the country. And I cautioned Mr. Yermak to say that pursuing prosecution of President Poroshenko risks deepening the divisions in the country, exactly the opposite of what President Zelensky has said he wants to do.
So it's fair to describe it as you discouraged him from such action.
I discouraged him. I raised concerns about what the potential impact would be.
And what was Mr. Yermak's response?
I believe, and I'm refreshed in this by seeing the testimony of others.
Mr. Taylor.
Mr. Taylor's testimony.
Ambassador Taylor and Mr. Kent.
Right. And I believe based on that testimony that Mr. Yermak said, well, what, you mean like asking us to investigate Clinton and Biden?
So it was something along the lines of, it's okay for you to ask us to investigate the manner in which you are, these so-called investigations, but you don't want us to investigate our own president. Is that a fair way to describe this?
Well, I didn't quite understand what he was referring to, because to my knowledge, we weren't asking to investigate Clinton or Biden. And so I was kind of puzzled by the remark, and that's why I didn't respond.
Did you go and investigate what he might have meant or ask anybody?
No, I thought I took it something of a deflection from the point I was making about unifying Ukraine.
But in all this time, I mean, Mr. Giuliani in this time, in that May to September, he mentioned the Biden investigation. He mentioned Biden over 50 times and 20-something times in relation to Ukraine. None of that stirred your curiosity?
Well,
finally come to this point?
Yeah, as I testified, I met with Mr. Giuliani once, and he did bring up Vice President Biden, and I pushed back on that, and I maintained a very clear distinction that Ukraine investigating its own citizens and corruption would be fine. Going beyond that to say we're going to investigate the vice president,
sure,
is not fine.
Did you have any discussions with anyone in the State Department or anywhere else in the administration about concerns about the investigation into Poroshenko?
Yes. So I know that I raised this with Ambassador Taylor in advance of that. We had been in some of the same meetings, some of the country team there. I don't remember whether I had raised it with George Kent or Phil Rico or not. I may well have done. But it was something that we had discussed as part of our meetings in Kyiv at that time.
I yield to the chairman.
So, Ambassador, when you had this conversation and you urged Ukrainians not to investigate or prosecute the former President Poroshenko, their response was, oh, you mean like you're asking us to investigate the Clintons and the Bidens? That was their response?
That's what I recall now from seeing Ambassador Taylor's testimony. Yes.
And you didn't understand that at the time, but then at the time, had you read the call record?
No.
Now that you've read the call record, that makes a little more sense, doesn't it?
Yes.
I was curious about something you said earlier,
Adam Schiff,
when you said that the 2016 conspiracy theory of Lutsenko had no merit, but you didn't see any harm in Ukraine investigating it if they wanted to investigate it. Is that right?
Yes.
Don't they have enough legitimate corruption to investigate without spending time investigating a debunked conspiracy theory?
There's all kinds of corruption to investigate in Ukraine.
But nonetheless, you propose that they go ahead and do this investigation of something you thought without merit, because this was part of an effort to fix the problem that Giuliani was creating?
I did not propose it.
Well, I think you said you were okay with it, or you amended statements, as we've seen, to include it, because, well, if it would help fix the Giuliani problem, was that the thinking?
Yes, that's correct. If it threads the needle between what is reasonable for Ukraine to do and if it resets the negative perceptions held by Mr. Giuliani and then the president, then why not?
This was part of what you described in your opening statement as your effort to, when you see a problem, to fix it. Is it clear to you now, Ambassador Volker, based on the September 25th call, that you were not able to fix it?
Based on the transcript that was released on the 25th, I can see now that there were a lot else going on that was about Vice President Biden than I knew at the time. And the efforts that I was making were clearly not in the context of what had already been discussed by the President on July 25th.
So it's fair to say you were not able to fix the Giuliani problem.
That's correct.
Ms. Stefanik.
Led coverage of the House Intelligence Committee impeachment inquiry hearing. We now turn to Elise Stefanik, Republican from New York.
Mr. Morrison, for his great work on the House Armed Services Committee on which I serve. I wanted to start with the July 25th call between President Trump and President Zelensky. Mr. Morrison, you were on that call, and there was no mention of withholding aid on the call, correct?
That is correct, Congresswoman.
And there was no quid pro quo, correct?
Correct.
No bribery?
Correct.
No extortion?
Correct.
And Ambassador Volker, I presume you got a readout of the call, is that correct?
Very terse readout, but yes.
In this tertiary readout of the call, Ambassador, from the U.S. participants, was there any reference to withholding aid?
No, there was not.
Any reference to bribery?
No, there was not.
Any reference to quid pro quo?
No, there was not.
Any reference to extortion?
No, there was not.
And I presume you also got feedback from your Ukrainian counterparts as to how the call went. Did they mention the withholding of aid?
No, they did not.
Did they mention any quid pro quo?
No, they did not.
And did they mention any bribery?
No, they did not.
And in fact, the day after the call, you met with President Zelensky. This would be on July 26th.
That's correct.
And in that meeting, he made no mention of quid pro quo.
No.
He made no mention of withholding the aid.
No.
He made no mention of bribery.
No.
So the fact is the Ukrainians were not even aware of this hold on aid. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And in the coming weeks, you were in touch with Ukrainians as part of your official duties. And this included talking to Ukrainians over the phone, in person, on text. And the Ukrainians never brought up an investigation into the Bidens. Is that correct?
That's correct.
They never brought up the withholding of the aid.
That's correct.
They never brought up quid pro quo or bribery.
Let me bring up the aid. They did bring that up after the political article appeared on the
29th. I'm going to get to that. But until the political article,
then, no.
They did not bring it up. And you said in your closed-door deposition, quote, it never came up in conversation with them, and I believe they had trust in me that they would have asked if that was really what they were worried about.
That's
is that correct?
That is correct.
And as you pointed out, the Ukrainians never even knew their foreign aid was on pause until the article was published in Politico in August.
That's correct.
So they didn't know during the call.
That's correct.
And in fact, you had to correct Chairman Schiff on this timeline in the closed-door deposition. The chairman of this committee asked you, quote, when they became aware that military assistance was being withheld for a reason you couldn't explain, no one could explain, weren't they under even greater pressure to give the president what he asked for on the call? And you answered, Ambassador Volker, quote, to my knowledge, the news about a hold on security assistance did not get into Ukrainian government circles as indicated to me by the current foreign minister, then diplomatic advisor, until the end of August. Is that your testimony?
Yes, it is.
And Chairman Schiff also got the facts wrong again when he asked you this, quote, at the point they learned their aid was paused, wouldn't that give them added urgency to meet the president's request on the Bidens? And you answered, Ambassador Volker, quote, I think the Ukrainians felt like they are going in the right direction, and they had not done anything. They had not done anything on an investigation, end quote. Isn't it the case, Ambassador Volker, at one point, Chairman Schiff said to you, when you were truthfully testifying, quote, Ambassador, you're making this much more complicated than it has to be, end quote. It's page 127 from the deposition. Is that correct?
I remember that.
But the truth is the facts are indeed not complicated. And I'm going to close out with two questions for the both of you. Did Ukraine open an investigation into the Bidens, Mr. Morrison?
Not to my knowledge, ma'am.
Ambassador Volker?
Not to my knowledge either.
Did either of you ever have any evidence of quid pro quo, Mr. Morrison?
No, ma'am.
Ambassador Volker?
I did not.
Any evidence of bribery?
No, ma'am.
No, ma'am.
Any evidence of treason?
No, ma'am.
No evidence of treason.
With that, I yield back.
Republican Elise Stefanik of New York, kind of becoming a Republican star during these hearings. We now turn to Democrat Eric Swalwell, California.
Yes, Congressman, he did.
You testified that Ambassador Bolton had a one-on-one meeting with President Trump in late August related to Ukraine security assistance. Is that right?
Sir, can you point to where I testified to that?
On page 266, you said Ambassador Bolton had a one-on-one meeting with President Trump in late August 2019, but the President was not yet ready to approve the release of the assistance. Do you remember that?
Sir, was this is 226?
Yes, to 266 and 268. But I'm asking you, did that happen or did it not?
Sir, I just want to...